From the Bucks County Justice Center, this is Marion Callahan delivering news from the Philadelphia suburbs for The Intelligencer, Bucks County Courier Times, and the Burlington County Times. In today's podcast, we discuss with our panel of experts the topic of ransomware and trends in cybercrimes. With me today is U.S. Secret Service Special Agent Sunny Natani, who currently works as Program Manager for the Philadelphia Electronic Crimes Task Force. We also have Michael Bannon, Director of Bucks County Consumer Protection, Alan Herr, owner of HPT Systems in Upper Southampton, which offers IT services to local government, police departments, and businesses, and Doylestown's very own Blake Lertzman, owner of D-Town Tech, who has experience with consumers who've walked into his shop after facing the destructive aftermath of this kind of attack. First of all, thank you all for being here. I'd like to start with Blake Lertzman, who has seen targets of this crime shifting from individual consumers to businesses. Tell us first, what is ransomware, and what kind of experiences, day-to-day experiences from consumers have you experienced?
So ransomware will attack an individual's computer. It's mainly on the Windows operating system, and it will lock down all of your files. Everything that you have will be encrypted, and you will not be able to access any of the data, review any files, for example, your photos, your music, your QuickBooks, your personal family history logs. Basically makes everything on your machine non-functional, and your data is as good as gone if you're willing to pay, unless you're willing to pay the ransom.
And so when people walk into your, have walked into your store with, you know, facing, you know, that kind of lockdown, I mean, do they assume that the criminal is going to be easy to find? Like, what are they experiencing?
Everybody is assumption that I can just call the police and the police are going to fix it. And the police, unfortunately, cannot do anything. And then they say they'll call the FBI and maybe they could help. It's one of the very black and white things. I could preach to them till I'm blue in the face, but for the most part, there's no way around it unless they're willing to gamble and pay the ransom. And depending on who you talk to, they say it may or may not be worth it. It's usually something that happens if people are caught off guard, and it's not a good situation when it does happen.
And you told me about one local business owner who dodged a bullet. You know, how did he get so lucky?
He was a local auto body shop that's been in business for over 25 years. They do a lot of insurance work, and if you've ever been in an accident and things happen, it can be hundreds of small pieces to fix your car. The CRM software that they subscribe to every month actually does offsite backups in multiple layers, so if something were to happen, they were able to roll back to a previous day or week before their data was encrypted. So 25 plus years of client database was able to be restored to a previous time, and they were able to keep everything. There's actually another business that happened to that had the same situation. Again, offsite backups, part of the monthly subscription service, and they were able to retain everything. If you open it up on one computer and it's on a localized network, it can travel across the network and it will take out multiple machines.
Gotcha. And we will definitely talk about some protections to be put in place, you know, toward the end of the podcast on what people can do. But I wanted to ask Special Agent Sunny Natani, what makes this crime so hard to prosecute?
It takes time to do an investigation to figure out where who the bad guys are. And in most cases, the bad guys are overseas, you know, in countries that are not law enforcement friendly and don't share intel with the U.S., so trying to get information from those governments on trying to keep the investigation going is very difficult. What the FBI and the Secret Service is able to do is kind of, when they attack a computer, they use software, the ransomware. It's never the same. So what the Secret Service and the FBI does is make a catalog of all the different types of ransomware. So if there is a case in Bucks County, and there's a case in Montgomery County, and the case in Seattle, Washington, and it gets reported to the FBI or the Secret Service, then they will put their heads together and say, okay, this ransomware is from this group operating out of this part of the world, and this is being worked by the Secret Service. These four cases that the Secret Service got called out on is ransomware, and the FBI already has an open case on this ransomware, so the FBI will take it. And that's how we kind of triangulate where the people are. But once you get and identify a person, suspect A, then to try to get that suspect to be brought back to the U.S. for prosecution is almost impossible. I had one case when I was in New York where the guy was known to the FBI, Secret Service, and Postal Inspection Service as being one of the big guys in this scam. And he they travel out of their countries, but they travel in fake passports. And he got arrested in a country that was an extradition, basically an extradition country with the U.S. It still took us 4 years to extradite him back to New York and to have him face criminal justice. The big reason is that when there is a big case, some type of case, like people want to know, you know, where the perpetrators are caught. And usually if there's an assault or something, they can show that this person did it. But with this case, by the time you catch the people, it's maybe 3-4 years down the road and people have already forgotten what has happened. But it's one of those things where you just kind of, it's a persistence type thing.
Wow. And so what type of trends are you seeing in these crimes? Like what kind, like I know that they are now crippling government organizations, hospitals, other types of groups that have were really not targeted in the past.
It's all about money, okay? These people will, like in the ransomware case, they're doing it for a reason. It's to make money. It's to get paid. And they look at it as a business, not as a crime. They do. We obviously look at it as a crime. So they will go to, let's just say, a dentist's office, and they will maybe put down 7 or 8 dentist office on their list, and they will just try to attack, penetrate, and basically encrypt their whole network, which means to say they'll lock it out unless you pay them the ransom. And they'll do that to maybe out of the 7 dentist offices, maybe they're able to hack 4. And the reason is that they're doing it for money. So it's all about money. They're trying to go for the trend is to go for people that you think will pay the ransom. So smaller companies, sometimes large companies, but it's difficult for us to track it because some companies don't want to bring law enforcement in. They don't want to advise the public, so they kind of pay it off to the side, like, and nobody ever finds out about it. So those we can't track, but the ones that we do track, the trend is, hey, law offices are big targets because it's all data. You know, that's clients' data. It's not the company's data. So, hey, we need to get that back. We have to do whatever we can. The one case that one of our consultants told us about was the $800,000 that was paid by a law firm in Texas.
Wow.
Now, again, paying the ransom, the other thing I'll talk about that is that the law enforcement does not advise to pay the ransom. That is our standard answer. However, we understand that businesses have to consider their position and what they're willing to do. We have a consultant, and there's many consultants like this out there that will specialize in talking to the terror, talking to the, you know, the cyber criminal and getting your data back. And they have like a 95% success rate in doing it because they're skilled in operating. It's not just, hey, here, take all the money and give us the data. It's kind of like a give and take type thing. And that's what they're skilled in. That's what they're trained for. But to get that service from that consultant, it's very, very costly.
Right. So it's about the money. And I know that they've been targeting businesses in school districts, you know, and they're typically, you know, strapped for money. So Alan Herr, he's owner of HPT Systems, which offers IT services to local governments. He's seen the kind of damage that this crime can inflict upon public agencies. Can you give us a couple example of what you're seeing in the public sector?
Well, public sector is one of our niches. We also do healthcare and some general purpose business kinds of relationships. But, you know, we provide services for about 15 or 20 different municipalities in the area. And we definitely have seen them be hit with ransomware. You know, again, I agree with Sonny that the targets more and more are all about the money. They're trying to find people that are going to pay the ransom. And so in the early days of ransomware, what I saw was a very broad-based attacks that, you know, seemed to latch on in individual workstations, didn't particularly spread with any great speed to other devices. That was some 5-6 years ago when this was all kind of new.
And was that the case in Bristol Borough? I know you mentioned
Bristol
Borough
had a couple of attacks. They were instigated by emails and email attachments, which is pretty much what we see as the delivery mechanism for these attacks. And the email messages were coming in from very friendly sources, seemingly. They were not legitimate, but they were friendly seeming emails. And the users open the emails, open the attachments, Nothing happened because these things are time bombs, if you will. And so days later is when the attack would actually hit.
I thought it was interesting. You said time bombs. And you, when we first spoke, you spoke about that tactic. Can you just explain that briefly? Because I don't know that most people understand it. I know if I clicked on an email and it was infected, you said I would not know about it right away.
Not necessarily. No, you probably wouldn't. Not for this type of an attack. At least that's my experience. The idea is that they want to be stealth. They don't really want to tip their hand until they have had the time to do the encryption piece. And encrypting a hard drive, encrypting a network, spreading from, you know, one station to many stations takes time. So the most recent attack that I've seen, which was not government but was small business, did just that. It started with a workstation. It hit Friday night in the evening when nobody was there. It worked its magic all weekend long, encrypted every single station, every server, every device, even encrypted or attempted to encrypt some of the backups. So by the time we got the call on Monday morning, the network was completely unusable. Every system was encrypted. Luckily, the backup systems that we had in place were solid, and we were able to revert back to a safe point in time, which was the previous Thursday night, and were able to restore the servers and get people back up and running. They did not pay the ransom, and I agree with Sonny. Our recommendation to our clients is not to pay the ransom because you're dealing with thieves. But my perspective is small business, not a giant hospital. So I understand if you've got a hospital and you need to, you know, restore patient care in a short period of time, then you may have to pay the ransom in order to at least get back into operation quickly. But you have to assume when you've been hit with something like this that your system, any system that's been involved, has been compromised and, you know, is unusable. Right. So that's the assumption on our part. Our recommendation is when people get hit with this, if it affects just a single station, well, clearly that station needs to be rebuilt. In the case of my client that had the widespread outbreak, which is the most recent one, we had to rebuild everything, the entire network.
And with school districts and local governments, what's at stake? I mean, why should people, you know, the public care about, you know, a ransomware attack on a local school agency or a local school district or public agency? What are some of the things that are at stake?
Well, clearly the expense is the first thing. You know, it could be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to remediate a situation like that. You know, my client had 20 stations. A school district might have 2,000. A hospital might have 5,000 stations. So to rebuild all of that from scratch, from a manpower perspective, is quite expensive. And in addition, you know, the record keeping within a school district, you have, you know, minors, you have employee records, you know, all of that stuff is at risk. And so clearly there's a real problem from the public perspective, from a cost perspective, if right. Not from security.
And these are crimes we don't often, you know, hear about. So, and while hospitals, I know, are mandated to report the crimes mm-hmm. and how many people are affected, no law or regulation exists for public, you know, agencies, even local governments, school districts, housing authorities. I wanted to talk to Michael Bannon because you hear a lot of the reports, and I know that a few years ago, there weren't many. So talk to me about the rise in your experience.
Right. So thank you for having me today. I would certainly say in our office in the past couple of years, we've seen this ransomware thing evolve. It used to be we'd get maybe one phone call from a resident that maybe visited an adult website and their computer got locked down and they had an issue, and we would try to help them with whatever kind of issue that they've had. But over time, and I think as we've discussed here, as scam artists have realized where the money's at, and it's not with with the individual consumer. It's with the business and their ability to be able to pay it. So clearly they have made a move to go towards the small businesses, which is, I guess, good for consumers, not so good for small businesses. And it's crucially important, businesses and government agencies. I know there were a few phishing attacks on the county also. I received some of those emails myself as a government person. So it's very concerning to everybody, and certainly it's important to bring awareness to the subject so organizations take precautions.
Gotcha. And I know that you provide materials, tips from your office.
That's right. We've kind of geared. We went from when we realized this change was happening, we were consumer protection for residents of Bucks County, but we've kind of shifted our focus to small businesses to try to help small businesses. We speak at organizations, Rotary clubs, and try to help small businesses as we saw this crime morph, I guess.
And before we go, I would like for each of you, if you don't mind, to share a few pieces of advice on how, whether individuals or businesses, can protect themselves. Michael, we'll start with you. Maybe for the average consumer, what is something that you think the public should be aware of that maybe they don't know that they could do to help protect themselves?
Well, I do think that every small business, government agency, whoever maybe has to evaluate their technical system to make sure it's secure from these kind of attacks. And they need to think about what they would do if they've been attacked by one of these attacks. What's going to be their answer? Are they going to pay it, not pay it? So now is the time to take the precautions, do the safety things that you have to as an organization to prepare if one of these attacks is to happen.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Blake?
It's one of those situations where, like, it's like kind of like a car warranty. If you buy it, you'll never need it. And if you don't have it, you're going to need it. Being proactive and spending that few extra dollars a month, or the number can change depending on how large, if you're an individual or small business, that few extra dollars a month could potentially save you tens of thousands of dollars just in repair fees, let alone loss of wages and loss of income. So just being proactive and spending an extra few dollars to make sure all your stuff is backed up and it's backed up correctly will go a long way, because if, God forbid, something does go south, it could cost you tenfold versus a few dollars or a few hundred dollars a month to, you know, make sure that everything's going to be safe. Because when things go sour, we've all seen it and we know people, it goes sour very, very quickly, and you can't just put a drain in it. It's done from that point on.
Some notes I've written down here is training. In my experience, training can help reduce a cyber attack, whether it's bringing in a consultant just to talk to the people or hiring somebody to do a pen test. And a pen test is a fancy word for saying a penetration test. Okay, I've hired this individual. Now, the company doesn't know it. The employees don't know it. And he's going to go around and see where we're vulnerable, give the owner a report. These are the areas where you guys need to fix. These are the areas where you need to train on. That helps, in my experience, a great deal. Have a plan in case your company is a victim of a cyber attack. Have a firm, one of these two gentlemen, or a firm like that that you have a relationship with, that if you do go lights out, you can call. You know, the old saying, if your roof is leaking, it's too late to call, you know, to search for a roofer. You should have somebody kind of ready to go. Make sure you have a functional network backups. The one consultant, he says that when he goes to every company, the biggest flaw they have is their backups are not tested, they're not verified, and when they need them, they're not available. Don't have the backups connected to the network. It's a convenience thing. I know that if we delete a file, we can go pull it off, but two of the calls that we received from large companies, their backups were attached to the network, which meant them...
Wow,
so it took everything out. It took everything out. And it was for convenience. So again, that's something that people don't think about. Conduct a tabletop exercise, depending on the size of your company. And a tabletop exercise would be as simple as, okay, you hire somebody to come in, and now you're in a scenario where you are attacked, your network is shut down. What is everybody responsible to do for everybody? Depending on the size of your company, that would either be a good or a bad thing. And if you are a victim, please obviously contact law enforcement to let us know. We can help. As much as we can help. Again, we're not there to kind of put your network back up. We can tell you how they got in. We can give you some helpful advice. We can try to hunt down the person and catch the person that perpetrated this on you. So those are the recommendations I have.
Thank you. Alan, anything left?
Well, my colleagues here have covered a lot of ground and all good advice. The backup is, for me, the biggest thing, and I agree that, you know, it's tough to maintain backups. It takes time. My recommendation is generally to have two modalities for backup. A local backup and a cloud-based backup would be my recommendation. There definitely are some techniques for protecting the local backups because they have been vulnerable in these most recent variations. So there are some tactics to protect the backups that are important. Awareness on the part of the employees. Sonny mentioned training. That's a great thing. A lot of this is common sense. Not having your employees open emails willy-nilly without thinking about it, without looking at the address to see if it looks right. If it's, you know, if it doesn't make sense to you, then you shouldn't be opening the email. And then the final thing I would suggest is that in a small business context, cybersecurity insurance. To talk to your insurance guys about cybersecurity policies. At this point in time, they're fairly cheap. And while it's not going to help you clear up the problem, it can pay for the experts to come in and help you with that bill. So that's a big one. So I've been involved with a few people that have looked at those policies, and you know, it can be a lifesaver for a small business.
Thank you.
The one company that we dealt with that was a global company, it was their insurance that quarterbacked them, bringing them back up.
Wow. So it wasn't their insurance necessarily paying the ransom, but they were able to...
They bring in, the insurance companies have their own people, and their people that they do direct billing with, they will bring them, because that's part of the policy.
Yep.
They will bring them to you, and then those people will work to bring you guys back up, bring the company back up to where the company can get to. And it's all paid for by the cyber insurance and the cyber insurance, because they're in business to kind of make the facilitate for the customer, so you tell all your friends and their business grows as well.
I see. Well, that's an interesting news story for another podcast.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of this one. I want to thank you all for sharing your expertise. And for more information, for a full story on ransomware trends from our news organization, please follow me at Marion Reports on Facebook and at Marion Reports on Instagram, where I'll post the full story, if all goes according to plan, tomorrow, along with tips on how to protect yourselves and your organizations. Have a great day, and thank you for listening.